But in the end, getting to see two of the best young teams go head-to-head. Ultimately, though, how much did we miss J-Dub last night, Dave?
We missed him a lot. There were so many times and possessions that I saw just in the first half. I mean, I'm not even going to talk about the second half at this point, but the first half, there's so many possessions in the beginning of the game where, like, the shots just did not go in. I mean, we lost by 10. But yeah, in the first quarter of the game, there was probably 12 shots that are typical shots we would hit that did not go in. I'm probably exaggerating by a few shots by saying 12, but it just seemed so many shots were just like doink, doink, doink. And I look at it and I say, where did we get the help from? Well, we got 15 from Chet. We got 15 from Josh, which is great. 18 for Dort. 11 for Cason Wallace, another great game for Cason Wallace. But that extra 20, 15 points that J-Dub brings was the difference in this game. And his defense would have created another issue for them. So we miss J-Dub. Hopefully he can back.
All right. So
quickly,
let's take a, because there's a lot to like about that game other than, you know, we didn't get the win. I love Haliburton, by the way. And it's good to see Rick Carlisle.
Who doesn't like him, man?
But J-Dub was
he's just a great player.
What was he, picked 12th by the Thunder?
11th.
11th. Either way. Tim and 11. Jang, 11th, yeah. 12th, they were right there. So Cason was picked at 10th, and we had 10th.
That's right.
You know, and then, but we're looking at this, and you can never have too many J-Dubs on your team. Like, when the shots aren't falling, the ability to get to the basket and finish at the hole, the ability to be a three-level scorer, that mid-range game is really nice for him when he's knocking down threes. Like, we needed him all game last night. And I kept feeling like Shea was, like, expecting, like, somebody else to, like, just step up and just start going J-Dub mode, and it just wasn't happening. So we've talked a lot about this, but right now, okay, Sengun avoided any serious injury. We're very seriously considering all of the things that are happening right now in Houston because of we own their pick. And
own it.
The idea of being able to get another player like J-Dub or, like, you know, Shea was picked at 11th, I think. Like, you can find elite talent late in the first round, late in the lottery of the first round. So my question is, What are you seeing right now? What's going on with these picks? Like, is it free fall for Houston? Shout out to Alessandro hitting us up, asking this question, kind of sparking my imagination again with this. What's up right now with the Clippers situation? You know, we saw Kawhi leave the arena with back spasms, and they blew a lead to the Timberwolves. Like, this is fascinating to me because this all plays into our future, too.
So let's just look at it like this is, we said since December that the Clippers were going to have a really hard time in March. It was just going to be their kryptonite. So many games, you know, end of the season like this, it's going to be really difficult for them. We're seeing that right now. I think they're 5-5 in the last 10 games, just really having a hard time holding their heads above water. Kawhi goes down. We don't know what's happening, but it's not good. As far as the other stuff that's going on, let's talk about Sengun, because I think that's a great, let's just say he misses 12 games.
Bone bruise on his knee and ankle
bone
sprain.
Bone bruises suck.
They suck.
Third degree ankle sprain. That's a month. Right there is a month.
Yeah. We're not, because no ACL.
I've had a grade 2 ankle sprain and I was done for a month.
I don't know grades. I just know I've had some ankle sprains,
fun.
Bro. Like, and there's definitely a severity thing to them.
So for me, I look at it like if he's lucky 1 month, and then he's going to be super, like, sensitive on that, you know, ankle for a little bit longer. So I'm shutting him down. I'm not like, you know, Sengun, you proved us 21 points a game. You know, you're one of the best young centers in the league. Let's get you back to 100% before we bring you back. And that's going to be, you know, mid-April. So I think that they pull that back. They pull it back hard.
Done for him.
I mean, I could see if he was a 27-year-old and they were fighting for a playoff position, sure. But at this point, they don't own the pick wherever they finish. It doesn't matter. You know, like, unless they, you know, finish top four, which I want to say, if they want to get to the top four, the best route at this point to do it is get into a top eight pick. The reason you get into a top eight pick is because for whatever reason, 8, 7, 6, 5 have a really good chance to move up into the top five, top four. So if I'm sitting there, I'm looking at that and saying, if we have any chance at all, it's by essentially just throwing the towel in, trying to go and lose as many games, which goes exactly what we need, because Utah right now, it has their pick, because I think they're sitting at number 9 or something like that, you know, and we have to figure out how to capitalize on that pick, because it's not that I want Utah's pick this year, but I think that Utah is going to be good enough next year that the pick could not matter, you know? And that's why, to me, it's like, I would rather have it this year than next year, because at least Sam Presti can take that pick and, let's say, the Houston pick and move up a couple spots. And next thing you know is we're picking in the top 7 or something like that, you know? Like, that's worth it.
So, theoretically, the Jazz pick right now is slightly out of play, but since it's a lottery, it could be in there. Like, it's always weird because you're like, oh, it's their 9th, but the 9th could just, it could be the 11th. Like, it doesn't matter. So, it's all, like, within the realm of possibility. It's, like, above or below 50%.
It's all one game.
Right.
It's all one game.
We got a chance there. But ever since we got the Jazz pick, I never expected it to cash in. Like, I expected, I think it becomes 2 seconds later on. I was like, this is made to do that, because with Danny Ainge, the Jazz are either going to be so bad or so good. One of the two, right?
It's next year that the pick still is a first round pick. I think it's top 9 protected.
Okay.
Top 8 protected, something like that. So it's slightly better than this year. But after that, yeah, I think we lose it. So it's cash in time.
But it's that Houston pick that, like you're saying, like, they could find themselves in a spot for aiming for a top 4 through lottery luck, which I find that to be a little unlikely, but I also think there's a chance that they could try to win and just not be capable of doing that, which is even more embarrassing. So it's kind of back and forth. And then we go back to the Clippers, like I was mentioning earlier, and this idea that Kawhi is the long-term investment that the Clippers are counting on for them to be relevant for the duration of our picks that we get from them really makes me think we're going to get not just what we've already gotten from the Clippers, but maybe a little bit more. Like, if you go Shea, J-Dub, plus, it gets interesting. So I'm really curious what happens here, like, with these picks. I don't want to get too carried away, but like, there's this mentality right now within the national media, even the local media for the Thunder, that a lot of wait and see. This team hasn't proven anything yet. You need to have playoff success before you'll get credibility. We're not getting any mentions in the national media. When you try to read stuff about us online, you don't get to see us play on TV very often. And so everybody's just kind of ignoring the Thunder right now. And you go out and you see J-Dub not be there. And you wonder, like, could this team be successful without J-Dub in the playoffs? I don't think so. I think we could have maybe a round of success, but like a deep playoff run is going to be predicated on having guys like J-Dub, even like Chet and Shea, all have to be healthy. Now, if you can find a way to draft well and mature, there is a world in which you could see us being so good that we could lose one of those guys and still make a deep run, right?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I want to say, like, I'm 100%er, like, every single time I have sex, I create an orgasm, you know? I'm not like that, man. And unfortunately for the situation we're all in for this team, without being healthy, we're just not going to get it done. In order for us to have success, we have to be healthy going into the playoffs. If you don't have all things working for you, ain't shit not going to happen. You're going to sit there and you're going to be like, sorry, babe, wish it could have lasted longer than 25 seconds this time. Like, that's just your thing. I mean, that's where this Thunder team is at. If they can get into the playoffs and it can be 100% healthy, right? They'll be able to last a long round. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying a long round, and as being like in the Western Conference Finals, and we're making a team really scratch their heads to say, how are we going to stop this team? How are we going to make it past this team? Because this is not normal if we're healthy.
So what do you think we learned about our team without J-Dub playing the Pacers. First of all, the Pacers are really good. I enjoy them. They're better than the record, and they're going to be really good soon. But, you know, do you see anything that we can pick up for the game, for the playoffs, like rotation-wise? Like, we got to see Gordon Hayward playing at the starting position. I thought that was interesting. I feel like he's getting a lot more comfortable in the offense.
Well, let's just talk. I mean, let's just throw that out. How are we going to have success during the playoffs? And I think the team's success, yes, we have the bench, we have other places like that, is going to center around one player. All right. Now, in order to understand what type of season he's having, I think you have to look back at the history of the game. Okay, now this stuff is all out there. Anybody that's halfway smart can find this information, especially on fucking ESPN. Thank you, guys. But Shea is averaging 31.1 points a game at this moment. All right, he just broke the record on beating KD's, I think, for 48 games this season. He scored 30 or more points, which KD had 47, I believe. So Shea is doing incredible so far right now. He's also a league-leading 2.1 assists per game while shooting 54% from the floor, putting him on pace to join Michael Jordan and Steph Curry, right? As the only players in the NBA history to post 30 points, 2 steals while shooting 50% or better. Jordan did it, get this, 5 times. Steph did it 1. That's what we're talking about. And all... or 5 of those times that Michael Jordan did it,
3 of them.
3 of those times he won MVP. And to be understanding that is exactly what Shea is doing, that is what we're getting. We're getting a player like Steph Curry in the playoffs. We're getting a player like Michael Jordan in the playoffs. And if we're getting that caliber player that we see that we are starting to put together, and yes, people are like, well, he hasn't had playoff success or anything else like that. I get it. But if we're looking at his stats of what he's been able to do, he is posting himself up to having one of the greatest NBA for a guard season in history. And you got to start understanding that. And if he's able to do this in the playoffs and put up 30 plus points a game in the playoffs, then yeah. I mean, I think teams are going to sit there and being like, first of all, how do we slow down Shea? All the rest of the guys will do their thing, right? And we know by Dort, by going off one time in game 7, that he can score 30 points a game in game 7. You know, like, we know that Josh Giddey knows how to step up because he's done it time and time again in big stages. You know, we know J-Dub knows how to step up, and we definitely know Chet knows how to step up. So it doesn't take every single one of those players to click on any given night for this team to have success. But if you put Shea plus J-Dub, or Shea plus Chet, or Shea plus Josh Giddey, Shea plus Dort that have 30-plus point games, there's going to be incredible difficulty to stop us. And that's what's so incredible about our starting lineup is that we can get Shea guaranteed to have 30 points, but where the next 27-point-plus point person is a complete shit show after that. Because it's not like a shit show like in the sense of like people are shitting and throwing it at each other, right? This is like a true golden shit moment, you know, like shit in the cup, right? You know, like this is that moment. There's very few players, there's very few teams that have the ability to have starters on the floor like we do that can drop 2 guys that can drop 30 points in the playoff situation. And then we have our bench and we have guys like Hayward and Isaiah Joe and Cason Wallace has been putting together a nice stream of games recently. You know, like Jay Will. I mean, we've got so many great players coming off that bench for different scenarios, completely different scenarios, whether it's a physicality and bringing Bismack off there, or it's a let's go small ball and bring in Gordon. You know, like we don't know. Like coach has all these different weapons to be able to isolate during a playoff scenario and a playoff situation that I'm just excited about it. I know people will say it's going to be hard and they've got to go past this team and that team and this team. But my question to you is that like when this team's clicking and this team's truly clicking and they're playing really good defense and they're zeroed in on defense and they're playing really good offense and zeroed in on offense, who's going to stop them? And I don't think there's a team besides the Celtics that can play us in a 7-game series when we're clicking. And I think that clicking is going to be brought to you by the coaching staff and by the way that they prepare these players. And I think that's what's going to happen in the playoffs is that people are going to stop and be like, okay, either A, this is the beginning. I mean, everybody remembers it. You can go back to you know, Shaq and Kobe, right? Young players, right? You can go back to, you know, Akeem Olajuwon. You go back to these young players in their 20s that are getting these players around them to go in and compete in the playoffs. And they go in there and everybody's shocked at how they're able to win. I mean, you think about Tim Duncan, you know, like there's so many great players out there that the second they get a playoff breath of air, they turn into something completely different. And to me, I don't know which one of our four starters are going to turn into something different. But if I'm betting man, I'm saying it's coming from J-Dub, because J-Dub is showing me that he's ready for the next level.
Yeah. And you know, what we saw from Gordon over the last couple of games, I think is also kind of a piece to it. And so like, when you think about this team clicking on all cylinders, we haven't seen it because the pieces that Presti added, they're going to take some time to implement. And we're not going to really see the full product of that until, you know, we get about a month from now, right around the playoffs. So with Gordon, though, one of the early signs that I felt like, I wouldn't say it's early. One of the recent signs, though, I felt like things are going to be really good, are the way that, like, the way that he found Cason Wallace off the bench the game before last one, maybe two games ago. I think it was Memphis, where he was just like carving up the defense by attacking the perimeter, getting downhill, hitting the paint, and then spraying the ball out. And Cason was just able to do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel with Gordon that this idea that, like, well, how much basketball does he have left? You know, I see him really thinking through the game, him understanding what coach wants him to do, and learning how to be a star within the role. And that's a difficult transition on the fly, trade in the middle of the season. But if that's what his commitment is to, is understanding the passing schemes, the cutting schemes, understanding the offense and making an impact on defense, then we've really found ourselves in a spot that is much better than we were pre-All-Star break. And that's something that we're still, because I think even like right now, we're not as good as we were at the All-Star break, because some of the rotation pieces aren't there and Gordon is still trying to figure out his groove. So there's a kind of outside of rotation, but guys that would have stepped up in the absence of somebody recently would have been there. And so I think about that and I think, wait about 2 weeks. What we see in 2 weeks is really going to be a lot more indicative of how this is going to go in the playoffs. Obviously, the games are still exciting now. Man, I mean, the energy at the, I almost said Chesapeake, but Paycom.
Yeah.
It's electric. It's contagious.
It's different.
It's different. It's the youth, man. The youth make it cool.
Yeah.
Back then, it used to be just like the only people who could afford to sit in those seats were like the people who like had old money, you know, Nicholas Hill's old money. Now it's like, it's people like us. Like, we got jobs too, motherfuckers. Here we go. And we're going to make it our crowd. We got tattoos. We got beards. And we're badass. And we're way cooler than the old snobby, uptight pricks that used to sit courtside.
And it's something that's happening within even the community. Like I look at the idea, and if you guys haven't seen it yet, you guys need to look it up. But Steve Ballmer, the Clippers owner, he's building this $2 billion stadium. And he has this idea that he's going to have behind the backboard of the opposing team. He's going to have this group. It's going to be like a college atmosphere, you know? And I started thinking about that, right? And I started thinking about this idea that it will have this place where these guys can go and they can just cheer their living guts out, right? And they have like people there to make sure that people are cheering and shit like that. You know, like that's what is going to happen in Oklahoma City. You know, like there are so many people that are, like you said, our age that just want to be, you know, I say our age, you know, under 40 years old.
Bitches, we got money too now.
Huge voices.
What's that? We got money too now.
Yeah, and we want to sit in fun seats. And I think that's what's going to bring in the new stadium and all that other stuff that comes with it. It's going to be fun. So I get excited. I get excited about this team right now. It's fun time. I get excited that Shea, he needs to get more love for that MVP. I know it's going to be a hard way to get to that level, but I want to see it from Shea. I think he can really do some great things, and I want to see if he can get that MVP in the aspect of, you know, getting the respect that he deserves. I know he doesn't really care about the MVP, but I know for me, it's about the whole respect. He deserves to be respected for who he is and what he's doing.
Yeah. I mean, you can make an argument for a number of guys, and you know, Jokic with the championship, and all that. But I, you know, I'm a sucker for Cinderella stories, and this guy has put the team on his back. It's Jordan-esque.
When's the voting?
Steph-esque. I don't know. If you're smart, you're waiting.
Is it after the playoff starts?
I think it's in the break between the, like, right before the playoff starts. You're not supposed to, like, vote based on any playoff information. So.
All right. Well, then we have a push here for Shea. And what, 17 games left that he's got a legit opportunity here?
But we, I mean, if we don't get first place, I mean, he's not going to get it. He might deserve it still based on the numbers, but he's not going to get it. So, you know, a loss like that to Indianapolis, it's difficult because it's like, I mean, Indiana. But you want to beat Indiana. By the way, I love their fucking jerseys. Those are dope. But you want to smash them, and you want to just like be like, okay, move on with business, hold the number one position. We wake up today and we're tied with, you know, the Nuggets. Nice records, by the way, for both teams. But in the end, like, we really want that number one next to our name. So, yeah, that's the bummer about the loss. But, I mean, what do you think, Dave?
Pacers?
You think we'll turn it around right away, bounce back? We got one against Portland? Or who will we play next? That thing you sent me.
Mavericks.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. That's going to be great.
So, Pacers, Lakers, and the San Antonio Spurs are the only teams that beat us since the All-Star break. I understand that that isn't necessarily what you want to hear, but I mean, like, this is for me, I'm looking at it like this, is that we played the Suns, we played the Heat, we played against really good teams, and we've blown them out and made them look silly. And I think that this is really where it's at, that we're going to have these moments where we play against the, you know, Pacers or the San Antonio Spurs or the Lakers that we should beat, and we just don't. It's part of the growing process. It's part of understanding what this team is capable of doing. And I look at teams like Pacers, and if you're willing to run like the Pacers, you're going to always give us an issue. And it's just, you are. That is our style of game, and the Pacers matches our style of game, and it's hard. You know, like, we're running and gunning, getting to the open court, running some set plays, you know, trying to get these guys open. Like, they're very similar in that aspect, you know? Like, yes, there's so many different, you know, but they're similar in the way that they play, the style of hoops that they're trying to play and the vision that they're trying to use for the future. And I see that and I say, okay, great. But now we know, you know, like, now we've known, like, for a while that January, February, it was the physicality that bothered us. You know, like, as a team, the physicality, would, you know, we played against a physical team, we knew we were going to have trouble. We've overcome that. You know, now we're, you know, having trouble against teams that you have almost nothing to lose. Yeah. You know, they just want to play a good game against us because they have nothing to lose. And we're susceptible to that shit right now. And that's cool because we have to learn how to get over that in order to win in the playoffs. And I think this is a perfect time to do so because we're still not peaking. We're still not peaking. And when that peak happens, it's going to be very obvious. And then closer we get to the playoffs before we peak, the better it is, because that means that that's that many more games that we can go on peak,
dude,
get to that peak, bro, and just ride it.
Oh man. Well, probably should let you get out of here. Dude, yesterday you hit me up though about our friend Ian. Let me know.
Yeah, man.
That, he's not doing so well. So, sounds like from last message you sent me, Dave, that he's probably not going to make it. So,
yeah, man,
he's one of the good guys out there. One of the great human beings, known him since high school, and, great dad, great person. And just a shout out to his family, and prayers are with them and everybody. So,
yeah, man, losing a 25-year friendship is pretty rough. And like you, Mark, you said, is our thoughts with the family and, you know, Ian's kids. So, it's a moment in time where you recognize that being 40 years old, you're still not invincible. And, you know, enjoy your life while you can, enjoy your kids while you can, because tomorrow is definitely not guaranteed.
Yeah. And I'm sure someday after life, we'll smoke another blunt with Ian and it'll be good times again. But until then, love the people that are you're near and everybody that you care about. Tell them that you love them. And we love you. Thank you for joining us, guys. And we'll see you next time.